still kind of regret the kind of storm of all this bad publicity that came out at the time around our problems, because it confused people, you know, and they went, what? Is it their third or is it their second or what? What's going on, you know? So with Dog and Butterfly, we just kind of went, well, let's just make a nice, clean, solid, pure, great studio album. You know, when I hear those songs now, I feel proud. For one thing, I feel like we really did contribute something fresh to music. And I think really proud too, because those songs stand up quite well today. Dog and Butterfly. Hi, this is Ann Wilson of Heart.
And I'm Nancy Wilson.
And we're in the studio for Dog and Butterfly.
Like its predecessors, the albums Dreamboat Annie and Little Queen, Heart's September 1978 Dog and Butterfly album sold over 1 million copies and cast Ann and Nancy Wilson's superstardom in concrete, writes Tom Jurek on AllMusic.com. But he goes on to remind us, and I quote, "There was a price to pay for all of this success, and after Dog and Butterfly, original guitarist Roger Fisher left the band. In many ways, Heart were beginning to make their transition, but the wonderful balance of hard Led Zeppelin-influenced power rock and multi-textured ballads is still everywhere in evidence here. Dog and Butterfly is still a magical and thought-provoking album years after the fact, and a stellar example that not all rock had deteriorated into corporate slickness and hollow bombast in the late 70s," end quote. I sat down in the studio with Ann Wilson, lead singer and co-writer, along with her younger sister, guitarist co-writer Nancy, for the 5th anniversary of Dog and Butterfly. Nancy Wilson goes first.
And I'll bet that when you had that original band, you know, the band was the center of your universe, was it not?
Oh, sure, mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's right. Yeah, we were pretty aimed like pistols at riding the wave, you know, to somewhere that where we actually did get to go. But we worked super, super hard in the early years. If you've ever seen Coal Miner's Daughter, you know that movie?
Sure, sure.
It was a lot like that. I mean, we rented a car, we went to every radio station in the country and Canada, and then we, you know, did the never-ending 275-show tour the first year that Dreamboat Annie came out. So we were pretty dogged, and you know, the American way, I mean, you work hard and it pays off. You know, we were all kind of shells by the end of the first big blitz, but we had a career going. And I think, you know, we stayed aimed at it. In the 80s, it got a little tougher because the musical fashion changed so much and the culture changed so much when MTV came in and, you know, the drug culture went away from mind expansion more towards the ego expansion of cocaine. And so, you know, that really changed it for us for a while. It got tougher to follow the muse, you know, it got easier to be imaged and kind of run through the sausage maker of the image industry. But then in the 90s, the Seattle scene kind of burgeoned again, and like once in a while rock and roll does come out with a sledgehammer and kind of crash everything to bits and start over. So, you know, in a nutshell, that's kind of been our journey along the way, but we've never lost sight of the muse that we first started out with.
The doctor said,
Magazine, which was originally intended to be Hart's second album on independent Canadian label Mushroom. But a lengthy legal battle resulted in the album being released unfinished while the band defected to a major American company. Anne and Nancy Wilson of Hart agree that it was all very unfortunate for all concerned.
Well, yeah. No, it just went on and on.
Capitol and finally got the rights to some of our original material.
Right, yeah. They just didn't want to let go. They were like,
we never got royalties for the first couple albums.
The mouse that roared, you know. I mean, it was really kind of weird. But now it's all over finally, and there's got to be a statute even on bad feeling about this kind of stuff, you know, because it was so long ago that now we just go, well, they were turbulent times.
turbulent times they were.
But it did make us really feel like it was us against the world, which is, as we all know, the true rock and roll feeling, you know, which is us against the establishment, or, you know, like us against Mr. Businessman. It was perfect. I mean, it was perfect for us to write these scathing songs and, like, just really feel like rockers, just, like, striving
right.
out, you know. And so it had that good effect.
I remarked to Ann Wilson that as DJs in 1978, we were perplexed when the Magazine album came out after the Little Queen album. Yet the press releases were saying that Magazine was actually Hart's second album.
I know, I still kind of regret the kind of storm of all this bad publicity that came out at the time around our problems, because it confused people, you know, and they went, what? Is it their third, or is it their second, or what? What's going on, you know? So with Dog and Butterfly, we just kind of went, well, let's just make a nice, clean, solid, pure, great studio album and get people back. I mean, there's nothing wrong now, you know, it's just us as artists. And here's our record. So it was a time for calming down the seas, you know, and just getting back to work seriously.
About that time, I saw Hart in concert in June of 1978. They were already performing new, unreleased material in their live set that would later appear on the album Dog and Butterfly. Here's Nancy Wilson of Hart, followed by Anne.
Oh, sure, yeah.
Yeah.
We were always bringing new material on, you know, the crowd, but we always kind of laced it with the stuff people knew.
Yeah, now don't forget, this was a different era where people did have more of an attention span. We didn't have MTV yet with all the quick edit mentality. I mean, people were still, they went to a rock show and were a little bit more open-minded. They were there to have a trip and a good time, you know. So it was more acceptable to come out with something they didn't know.
Didn't take no chances. Who was
Hi, this is Ann Wilson of Heart.
And I'm Nancy Wilson.
And we're in the studio for Dog and Butterfly.
And I'm Redbeard, this multi-million seller, Heart's fourth platinum album in a row. One of the most endearing things about the Wilson sisters is that they've always worn their musical hearts on their sleeves. About the title song, To Dog and Butterfly, Nancy Wilson goes first.
That one was just me and Ann again.
Yeah.
She presented me with the lyrics, and we were very much into an album at the time by Loggins and Messina called Sailing, or Full Sail.
Full Sail. Yeah, good album.
And, there was a couple of songs on that album that we wanted to do something like.
Sail in the Wind
in particular. And so, that was the whole feel for that. And the little songwriting room that Ann had set up in her house then looked out over a really nice yard where her dog was always playing in this little meadow and chasing butterflies. And
that's right.
That's where the whole inspiration came. And again, it was kind of that kind of Zen-ish idea, of being in life and hopefully, getting as much knowledge from life and people, even older people around you, that are like mentors.
Mm-hmm.
And
like the idea of just like in life, keeping after the impossible.
Exactly.
Like just always trying to keep after it, even though it's impossible to catch. That's the idea of moving through, the experience of moving through something rather than goal orientation.
There I was with the old man, stranded again, so off I'd ran. A young world crashing around me, no possibilities of getting what I need. He looked at me and smiled, said, no, 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 child. See the dog and butterfly in the air, we like to fly. Dog and butterfly. Below, she had to try. She rolled back down to the warm, soft ground, laughing. She don't know why. She don't know why. Dog and butterfly. Place. Safe in the trees, you had tears on your face, wrestling with your desires. Frozen strangers stealing your fires. The message hit my mind. Only words that I could find. Receding dog and butterfly up in the air. dog and butterfly.
Now, it's important to note that the Wilson sisters had been romantically involved with brothers Mike and Roger Fisher, Hart's sound man and guitarist, respectively. But by the Dog and Butterfly album, both relationships were on the rocks. Here's Ann Wilson.
Yeah, like, frankly, the window was open and I was poised on the sill, ready to fly out. And I was way more confident. I had a lot of experience under my belt by then. Of being up on stage in front of people, and I was on fire, you know.
Being accepted.
Yeah, yeah, being accepted. I had the afterburners on. It was very cool. It was a cool time for me. I was falling in love with somebody else, and it was a very up moment, very, very full for me. And, you know, although I don't know whether I'll ever learn not to depend on people, that was probably one of my least dependent periods.
There's a song on Dog and Butterfly, of which Ann and Nancy Wilson remain proud to this day.
There's a wind called the Mistral Wind that blows through the south of France and other places, but it's
times of year.
Yeah, at certain times of year, it's a hot wind, and it seems to have a weird, like, stirring up effect on people and animals, and especially a lot of famous painters would use it as their inspiration. They'd go out and paint in it, you know.
Like when Van the Mistral, Gogh. Yeah. Van Gogh was one of them.
Like when the Mistral blew through, he just had to, like,
go out
in it, you know. And so it's just like we use that as a metaphor for
This is one of the songs.
Inspiration, you know.
Actually, on the Dog and Butterfly album is one of the first albums that our friend Sue Ennis, who happens to be sitting here listening, lyrically and musically, I always say that's one of my, I think that's one of our shining moments in music. I think it's a bit poetic and everything, but I think it stands really well on its own as a piece of poetry. It attempts to describe the inspiration, like when you are an artist. And we were sitting around in San Francisco where Sue was going to grad school at Berkeley, and we would rent hotel rooms for the weekend, like the Mark Hopkins or something, and we'd get a suite and we'd sit around and wait for a song to hit us.
Yeah.
And it was like sitting around waiting for the wind to come and fill our sails and move us along, like where's this inspiration? We're like these sailboats waiting for the wind to strike up.
Yeah.
And that's what got the song started. And, you know, we had the idea of the Mistral Wind because we were always looking for interesting analogies that applied to what
right.
we were doing.
Gentle breathing that moves the sea and make my
Yeah. So So it's kind of like that. And once you've been touched by it, or once you've been out, once you've felt that inspiration in your life and how high it can take you, you're never going to be the same. You're never same. Ever yeah. going to be the same.
So and you end up waiting for it to come back.
That's yeah. right.
And also, I always thought of it, too, like love, the big, big L,
exactly.
the capital L, you know, when it blows into your life and takes you away. And then if it goes on by, you know, and goes away and you see it disappear, you know, into the horizon, you're just like devastated because you know that that was it. You know,
and yeah, and on another,
you're hungry for it to come back.
On another
you
want level,
to be moved that way again. You know?
On another level, you could look at it like the '60s were an ultimate Mistral wind, you know, period in history. I mean, it was such an amazingly brilliant time, you know, in the culture. And when it went by, it was like, ah,
the Mistral Express.
Yeah.
That's Anna Nancy Wilson with the inspiration behind Mistral Wind on the 10th anniversary of Heart's Dog and Butterfly album.
Hi, this is Nancy Wilson from that notorious band called Heart.
Hi, this is Ann Wilson of Heart. Welcome back to In the Studio with Redbeard.
Thanks, ladies. I always have to laugh when I hear or read someone in the media pointing to Madonna as if her mid-80s debut was the first multi-platinum success for a woman. Or when Seattle's early 90s scene is purported to be the first indie success story. Heart did both. Way back in 1976, selling several million copies of their debut, Dreamboat Annie, starting literally by selling it out of their trunk of their car at gigs. Here's Heart lead singer and songwriter Ann Wilson.
People were hungry for what we gave them, and we were kind of the first of a kind, you know. A lot of people in middle America were just, they loved our particular way with words, and I just mean every man, every woman, you know. So, you know, they liked the way we did it, and they liked the fact that they could go rock out at a Heart show, and the guys got what they wanted, and then we came down and did beautiful sentimental songs, and so the women got a chance to feel their hearts swell, you know, and everybody got everything. I think that's why they would look forward to our albums, and we could ship those vast quantities, because that doesn't happen anymore to anybody. I mean, it's...
Not many.
I am the one to please you.
Looking back on Dog and Butterfly, Nancy Wilson is gratified that the material has held up over the years.
You know, when I hear those songs now, I feel proud. For one thing, I feel like we really did contribute something fresh to music. And I think really proud, too, because those songs stand up quite well today. We've kind of invented our own style that still kind of has held on through time, which is really the ultimate compliment for anyone, I think. And as far as how it compares to where we're at today, there is a, you know, honestly, there is a little nostalgia because things aren't essentially as, I think, as fresh as they used to be in rock and roll. I think that it's a lot more flaked and formed. And rock and roll, now that there's a lot of dance and stuff, you know, that's, you know, really muscling in there to the market, for rock and roll, it's everybody's scared to do anything new. Everybody's the palatable rock song, the bubblegum rock song.
Yeah, people want success and they want money, you know.
Yeah, and that too. And I think that's kind of put a leash on the wild animal that it used to be.
Mm-hmm.
And so I look back with a little nostalgia a little bit, but, you know, we're forever. I mean, these days, now that we've kind of come back again and we've kind of reestablished ourselves in the present, we have bigger plans than ever to kind of exercise our right to be different.
Absolutely. Well, yeah, that's really true about the wild animal with the leash part. But then, again, who really puts the leash on an animal, and that's the animal's owner. I mean, it's not the plane, it's the pilot, you know.
Yeah, and so, needing to come back and make our comeback, we did it in a comfortable way. But
right.
Now that we're back, we've got more freedom than ever.
Yeah, you know, when I hear those songs, especially Mistral, I think Mistral's the best example of us at our most proudly
creative,
loud, proud, poetic, you know.
Yeah.
When I hear that, I always think that just pure pride. I'm so happy with that. I'm so happy that if I never get another chance in my life as an artist to be that way, I got that one chance, and it got on the radio, and millions of people loved it and were influenced by it. And had the Mistral blow
and
through,
wondered what
know.
The hell it meant.
Yeah. What the heck is that all about?
No!
Both Ann and Nancy Wilson are critically aware that this is an election year and America's future hangs in the balance. First, Nancy Wilson of Heart.
I think America as a country, being, you know, one of the youngest countries as far as civilization is concerned, you know, we're really kind of the bratty teenager of countries, and we don't really pay a lot of attention to what's come before and what the ramifications and, you know, what, you know, we're leaping before we look here. And you know, even our dad, who was a lifer in the Marine Corps, who'd been in World War II and Korea and seen a lot of really intense action in that war, in those wars, when Vietnam was, which they didn't call a war, they called it a military action.
A police action.
As that raged on, our dad decided to, he couldn't go there anymore, and he wouldn't even recruit for that war. And that's when he retired and became an English teacher, of all things. But anyway, that's just an interesting aside, because he was looking for a peacetime situation where he could finally have his home life and his joy and his family back, and he found that, and you know, and his humor, mm-hmm. And so it's just interesting, you know, to be rock people who sort of spanned both of these war situations now. A few war situations now. And, you know, you can't just shut up about it. That's one of the reasons we're going out with Rock the Vote. We're going to set up voting booths where the people can register to vote. It's not a brain science, you know. I think it's more important right now to give people the idea that they are smart enough to figure it out and to take part. You know, the information is, it's confusing to a lot of people. So it's really not brain science. You can just sign here, show your ID, now you're registered, and they'll tell you where to go vote in your area. It's really easy. You can drive there, and don't worry about the chads. Everything's okay. Yeah. You'll figure it out when you get into the booth.
You know, I think it's pretty important that people realize that this election is the most important one we may have ever had, you know, in the sense that things can go a way or they can go another way, and it's going to really come down to the individual person getting off their ass and getting out there and voting, rather than, oh, I don't have time to go, I'm too busy, you know, I have to go pick up the kids or whatever, you know, I can't vote this time, but I get to sit around and just blast the administration or blast whoever wins, you know, that's not good enough anymore. I think we really have to put our action where our mouths are.
Yeah, even when the choices are not ideal, you know, you have to choose and you have to help steer the ship.
One choice is always going to be more ideal than the other, I think.
I do too.
There's always going to be a
lesser of evils.
Lesser of evils, so let's take the lesser.
Yeah.
You know.
Right. What's good for the planet and what's good for the global village?
And everyone turns on the news in the evening, and it's so depressing. It really bums everybody
out.
Frightening,
yeah.
And okay. So that's the horse we're riding right now. You can't pretend like you're not on the horse. I mean, it's people's job to understand what's going on, because this is an election year.
Got to vote.
And if you don't just face it, as depressing as it is, and figure it out and cast your vote according to some kind of research, then I don't know what. You're missing the boat. You're not helping anything. This could go on for years. Something's got to give. Election year. Rock the vote.
This is Redbeard in the Studio, thanking Nancy Wilson and her big sister, Ann. You can visit inthestudio.net for this and your other favorite interviews. In the Studio was written this edition by yours truly, Redbeard, transcription by Jane Carpenter, theme song by Andy Timmons. In the Studio, produced by Barbarossa Limited, copyright 2008, all rights reserved. Be a part of the In the Studio network at inthestudio.net.